So the way that I say Kickstarter is often a way to test and validate ideas for businesses, but a landing page is a way to test and validate the idea before you launch on Kickstarter.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, another Wednesday morning here in Japan, and I'm still here for you, grinding it out to release new episodes. As my buddy Brandon Telly says, success is boring. For those that haven't made it out here yet, this is a country full of distractions. Here are two interesting things I learned today. Two-day shipping on shoes from the Japanese branch of Amazon.com costs less than $4. And edamame, the green beans served at Japanese restaurants, have different flavors. The three main ones are summer aroma, fish, and girl after bath. I'll leave it to you to figure out how they came up with the last one. This week, we are going to go over what makes a crowdfunding campaign successful. Tons of tips in this episode, so I recommend to take notes. A lot of links mentioned, and all of those can be found in the show notes under episode 16 on smartbrandmarketing.com. Today's expert is Clay Abera. Let's get to it. So it seems like you are one of the first people making a name of yourself in the crowdsourcing niche. How did you get into it?
Yeah, so in January of 2012, a friend of a former client called me up, and I was on the beach in Hawaii with my girlfriend. We were on vacation, and she needed help with her crowdfunding campaign. It was struggling. She is a documentary filmmaker, not a marketer, and she said, "You know the internet." And I know marketing. At the time, I was not a crowdfunding expert, so I took a look at her campaign, and we were able to take it from 20% funded with 10 days to go to fully funded before she closed it out. So that was the first one. I just sort of told some friends about it. It was really fun because helping an entrepreneur, helping a creative and a filmmaker launch their dream, fund their dream, was very different than helping really big companies move the marketing needle a little bit, which is what I had done to that point. So I told a friend, and then one project turned into two. He recommended me to another friend to help with the project, and it just sort of went from there and via word of mouth. And then I've done some speaking at conferences, and now I'm building the blog and the course.
From what I understand, there are two platforms mostly used for crowdsourcing. That's Kickstarter and Indiegogo. What's the difference between them?
First, I want to back up and talk about the word crowdsourcing versus crowdfunding, because they're often used interchangeably, but they're actually two very different things. So I'll cover that first, and then we'll talk about platforms.
Perfect.
Crowdsourcing is pretty simply the sourcing of anything from a crowd. So we all know and use Wikipedia. Wikipedia is a crowdsourced encyclopedia. And what that means is the information on Wikipedia is sourced from a whole bunch of people. Now, that has nothing to do with crowdfunding. You can crowdsource almost anything. You can crowdsource information like Wikipedia. You can crowdsource work. You can crowdsource design. You can crowdsource advertising. There's a platform called Tongol, which is crowdsourced advertising. You can crowdsource design on platforms like 99 Designs. You can crowdsource work on Amazon's Mechanical Turk or Elance or Odesk. You can even crowdsource beer. I recently came across a beer company that allows people to submit ideas for flavors, and then they let the crowd vote on the one that they want, and then the beer company actually makes that beer. So that's crowdsourcing. Now, crowdfunding is the sourcing of funding from a crowd. So it's really kind of a subset. There's crowdsourcing, and then crowdfunding is a specific type of crowdsourcing, because what you're sourcing is not information or design or beer, it's money. Even within crowdfunding, there are four different types of crowdfunding. There's donation-based, rewards-based, which are platforms like Kickstarter and Indiegogo. There's equity-based, and then there's debt-based crowdfunding. So donation-based is usually small amounts, and usually the donor does not receive an award. It's more like a social cause, personal cause, charity, political campaign, something like that. So that's donation-based crowdfunding. We'll talk rewards-based crowdfunding last, because that's the one with the answer to your question about the two platforms. The other two really quickly are equity-based crowdfunding. So that's where investors, not backers or donors, contribute money. And in exchange for that, they don't get a physical item or reward. They get equity in the company. So it's different than getting a hooded sweatshirt. effort, they get 0.1% of your venture, let's say, you know, for example. So that's been around since 1996, but the Jobs Act, the recent act that Obama and others have passed, have created sort of two new types of equity crowdfunding. And sites like AngelList and Fundable and Early Shares and Crowdfunder are some equity crowdfunding platforms. And then there's debt crowdfunding, which is kind of peer-to-peer lending, where no rewards and no equity changes hands, but it's more like a bank loan. And then the last one, like I said, is rewards-based crowdfunding, which is what you first talked about. So yeah, the big two platforms for that are Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Although there's quite a few others popping up, a lot of them are for niche-specific products, but definitely Kickstarter and Indiegogo are the two biggest ones.
That's a really big field. I didn't even know it's so big. But what's the difference between Kickstarter and Indiegogo? That's like the ones I see interchanged a lot.
People always come to me and they ask, you know, should I use Kickstarter or Indiegogo? And usually what I tell them is that's the wrong question, because what they're really asking is not which platform should I use. They're saying which platform will make my project successful. And the answer is neither platform alone will make your project successful. I sort of liken it to throwing a party. If your goal is to throw a really, really great party, I can't just go to Tom and say, which bar should I hold this at? Which venue should I hold my party at to make it super successful? Well, the venue provides structure and it provides shelter from the rain and maybe good drinks and maybe music, but the venue alone does not make a great party. What makes a great party is inviting all the right people. And that's the same with crowdfunding. So when people ask me Kickstarter or Indiegogo, I often say, well, first, understand why you're asking the question. Because if it's because you think one platform is going to magically make your project successful, I say you need to rethink that. Just like a good party, you need to bring and invite 90% of the traffic and backers yourself. Now, there are nuanced differences between Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Kickstarter has a little bit more restrictive guidelines. There are certain things you cannot publish on Kickstarter. For instance, the biggest one is all cause related stuff. So people reach out to me and they say, I'm going to launch my project for defeating breast cancer on Kickstarter. And that means that they haven't even read the basic instructions of Kickstarter, which say we don't do any cause related projects. That would have to be something that goes on Indiegogo. There's some other main differences. One of the other big ones, the first one is there are certain things that are not a fit for Kickstarter. Medical related, cosmetic related, nothing cause related or donates a future percentage of profits to a cause. You would need to use Indiegogo. The other big difference is Kickstarter is all or nothing. If your goal is $50,000 and you raise $45,000, you get zero. On Indiegogo, there's that all or nothing option. You can run your campaign like that, or you can choose what's called flexible funding, where you pay a slightly higher platform fee. You pay Indiegogo a little bit more money, but what that means is you get to keep the money anyway. So in that case, if your goal is 50 and you raise 45, you still keep the 45 minus the additional platform fee. There's some other benefits to using one or the other. For instance, Indiegogo now has this thing called Outposts, which allows you to embed your entire campaign on your own website. And Kickstarter offers widgets and things like that for this, but Outposts allows you to basically completely replicate your entire crowdfunding campaign. So it lives both on Indiegogo and on your own site. So if you're the kind of person who has a lot of traffic to your own website, it could be interesting to take that over for a period of 30 days and basically turn your own site into your own crowdfunding campaign. So there are small decisions, but usually when people ask me, they're just kind of asking in a way to say which one's going to magically help my project get funded, and that's the wrong question.
What kind of fees are we looking at for those two platforms?
Kickstarter takes 5% of the total. And then you have to pay Amazon payments fees, which vary between about 3% and 5%. So it averages to about 4%. So if you add Kickstarter's fee and Amazon's fee, that's about 9% off the top. And that's not counting production costs, shipping costs, cost it is to, you know, market the campaign, et cetera, et cetera. So one of the things I help people with my course is to have a spreadsheet to really understand these fees ahead of time. I've seen some projects be very successful from their funding goal, but when they finally ran all the numbers and calculated their fees, they didn't make very much money, or they lost money because they didn't realize that, let's say, international shipping cost this much, or they didn't realize the production costs or the shipping costs. So that's very important to take into account. On Indiegogo side, if you choose the all or nothing, it's a very similar fee. And then if you choose the flexible funding, it's a little bit more if you choose the option where you get to keep the money regardless.
You mentioned you have a course coming up, right? So that will go really in depth into how to launch the project, or?
Yeah, there are about 6 total modules to the course. So getting started, which is some of the stuff we're talking about now, and understanding kind of the basics and the one-on-one stuff. And then plan, build, launch, promote, and follow up. And then there'll be a section with a bunch of kind of bonus resources and templates and spreadsheets and downloads and email copy and what's worked for other people and things like that.
What type of projects can you see that small businesses might come up with to utilize these platforms?
It's interesting. Like a lot of the projects that use these platforms end up becoming small businesses. So you've seen it for everything from launching small businesses, launching a cupcake factory, or, you know, launching a little bakery that makes cupcakes. Some friends of mine built Minaal, M-I-N-A-A-L, a really new kind of backpack, like completely, they basically scratched their own itch and created a product that they wanted to create. And now it's become a nice little sort of small business that they can run on the internet from anywhere in the world. So I think the options are sort of unlimited. What I would say, if you're a small business, browse Kickstarter. I would tell anyone this, anyone who's thinking about doing a crowdfunding campaign, browse Kickstarter, browse Indiegogo, look at what's out there, look at what's been successful. I think one of the biggest unknown or underrated aspects of crowdfunding is the fact that all the projects stay up there. So you can go on Kickstarter and see all the successful projects, and you can see all the failed projects. You can watch the videos. You can see what copy they used. You can see what pricing they used. You can look at literally everything, how many backers they had. You can get a rough idea of how much traffic they had. So in the world of marketing, good marketers think about testing and seeing what works and all this other stuff. On crowdfunding, it's all there. It's literally like a goldmine of marketing data, but most people are too lazy to go and do the research. So if I was going to launch a small business campaign on Kickstarter, I would go research everything that was even closely related to my area. If I was going to launch a new bakery using Kickstarter or Indiegogo, I would type in bakery into Kickstarter and Indiegogo and really dig deep and understand why the other projects were successful or why they failed. Now, you can't see the background of the marketing plan and how much press they got and things like that. But you can get an idea of press by searching the images. You can do a trick. So there's a fun little trick for your listeners called the Google reverse image hack. So let's just pretend you're opening a bakery. Go to every other bakery project on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, save the images, and then you can search Google not using text but using images, and it will return all of the websites where that image showed up. So you pretty much can see, oh, Melissa's Bakery got this kind of press coverage for their Kickstarter campaign because Google's basically telling you all the other places where those images showed up.
How would you search that? By file name, or can you upload the picture somehow?
Yeah, you can upload the picture, or you can paste in the URL of the picture. If it's on the web, you can just say open image in new tab or whatever. It's called the Google reverse image search, or Google. It's just called Google image search.
So let's walk through a scenario, right? Let's say there's a small business and they're filming a documentary around some idea that will work for their industry. They want to become authorities on the subject. The reason for the campaign is to get an initial audience for it and to cover the cost of the project. And they have a 2-month window to get this done. Now, I know you're probably going to say more is better, but I think 2 months would be large enough for them to quickly test an idea and see whether it's worth pursuing. So lead me through a bare bones 80-20 plan of how they could make this happen.
Sure. And the project you're talking about, you said small business, but then you said
documentary. Yeah, so just something around the project. So like maybe a gym is making something on losing weight, or just, you know, something, some kind of a documentary.
Sure. So there's quite a few documentaries. It's one of the larger categories actually on Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Kickstarter does a film festival every year just with films that were funded on Kickstarter. Film is great because if you're a filmmaker, you know how to make videos, and the video is a huge key to your success on crowdfunding. So what I would do first is build a landing page. You can use free tools like LaunchRock, which was recently acquired by one of the crowdfunding platforms, or you can use a paid tool like Lead Pages, or there's Unbounce. There's all sorts of tools. But the point is, and this is a relatively easy step that a lot of people don't do, put up a landing page. It should not be part of a larger website where there's 100 other things to click on. It should just be, this is what we're making. This is who we are. This is why we're making it. It could be the video. If it's a documentary team, they could record a video, you know, a month ahead of time. And then you launch the landing page and you pre-promote the landing page. So the only thing people can do when they land on the landing page is see what's there and then enter their email. There's nothing else to click on. What this does is it tests demand, because giving your email isn't as big an effort as giving your credit card, but it's a signal nonetheless that the person is interested in what you have to do. So if you have a trailer and a landing page and an email opt-in and said, enter your email to be notified for the best price when we launch on Kickstarter, we launch on Indiegogo, and the person doesn't enter their email, well, then they're not interested and they wouldn't have backed your Kickstarter campaign anyway. So the way that I say Kickstarter is often a way to test and validate ideas for businesses, but a landing page is a way to test and validate the idea before you launch on Kickstarter. I always say that crowdfunding projects get funded before they launch, not while they're live, because the ones that succeed build up the pent-up demand and interest, and they find their 1,000 true fans long before they launch. And then once they do launch, they basically are just saying, it's ready for you.
Okay, so we've launched the landing page. We did the reverse Google image search based on the other campaigns that we found, and we're promoting it. How are we promoting this landing page?
One way to do it is, let's just say that it's a documentary about fitness, nutrition maybe. I would go find other, not just other Kickstarter campaigns, so that's great. So we'll use the Google reverse image search to find other related Kickstarter campaigns. Use the Google reverse image search to find what blogs and media coverage that they got. So if you find, let's say, make a list of 10 similar campaigns, save all the images, and then you'll find all of the blogs, not just similar campaigns, but similar successful campaigns, because if there was some success, there was probably some level of press and exposure. And then you'll find, oh, this fitness blog wrote about this campaign, seems to have a lot of comments and likes and shares. So maybe that's a blog that writes about fitness Kickstarter campaigns. So that's how to build your media list. The emails to friends and family. There's a really great article on Tim Ferriss's blog called Hacking Kickstarter. That's pretty much a step-by-step of how to go through and segment your own personal address book, friends and family, other contacts, and send that out. The other thing is you want to build a share page before you launch. There's free code up on GitHub. If you just search Soma GitHub share page, it'll come up. Any developer can slap that up on a website, and you have a simple way for friends to sort of tweet and post and share the link. So that's another step to do before you launch. And then I would test everything from Twitter. So search people talking about these other projects, talking about similar documentaries. Follow them on Twitter from a Twitter account that's designed for the crowdfunding campaign, or from your own personal one if you have a Twitter account or have a brand built up, and say, launching soon on Kickstarter, this great documentary about why everything we know about fitness is wrong. And then you follow those people on Twitter. Well, by following them on Twitter, Twitter sends them an email. And if your bio is interesting and the link is interesting, that sends them to your landing page. And if they're interested, then they'll enter their email.
How do I search for similar topics on Twitter?
You can search for anything on Twitter. You can search. Twitter Advanced Search is one of the most underrated tools on the internet by far. You go to search.twitter.com and then click on Advanced. I think it's called Advanced. And you can search by any keyword. You can search within 20 miles of New York City. You can search by hashtag, any combination of those things. So Twitter is sort of like Kickstarter. The amazing thing about Twitter is you can search this public repository. You know, we all complain, myself included, that the NSA is recording all our words that we say, but we all have access to our own sort of mini NSA database of what everyone's tweeting, and none of us are using it.
Yeah, I've never really used that before. So what would be the next step after we've done all this so far?
So test to see what's working of those channels. If you're doing Facebook ads, if you're doing following people on Twitter, if you're trying Twitter ads, the key thing is to tell your story. And if you're getting interest and you're getting emails, extend that for as long as you can, get as many emails as you can. And then you want to build up momentum for your launch. And then when you launch, that's sort of the list that's in the Hacking Kickstarter post with Mike Del Ponte about how to launch to your friends and family. Ideally, you have some press lined up for the launch. So people that you've sent and said, will you write about this when we go live? There's something called an embargo in the press where they hold it until you go live. Another key thing is when you go live, you want to do what I call the bartender trick, which is have a few first big backers. It could be family, it could be friends, it could be a rich uncle who are willing to back it and donate right away. Ideally, it could be some higher dollar amounts, but the point is you want to show momentum right off the bat. And that's why exposure and press, and then emailing your email list, and then getting people to donate is the biggest thing. People sort of don't think about the email thing as important as it is, but Kitio was one of the projects I helped. And Lee and his Kitio team built up a pre-launch email list of 13,000 people, and he was funded in 36 minutes and 200% funded in the first day, and he ended up at $270,000. It's really important to stick your net in the river, catch some fish before you launch. So that's what I would do. And then once you launch, be ready, be managing the campaign, send a lot of updates. The campaigns that do well, that have more money, have a lot more updates. That's a mistake I see people make, because they don't send enough updates.
So let's go into the actual page, let's say on Kickstarter. Give me some do's, some don'ts, and what kind of rewards should the person put up there for, let's say, the documentary?
The biggest thing when you're thinking about rewards and pricing is you want it to be what I call below MSRP. What that means is MSRP is manufacturer's suggested retail price. So it's sort of what we expect to pay for things. People conflate crowdfunding with fundraising. And what that means is they tend to price their rewards much too high. They think for a documentary download, they should price it at $20. Well, you never pay $20 to download a movie, right? We get all we can eat from Netflix for $10 a month. Or if we do download a special movie on Amazon Prime, maybe it's $8 or $9. So people take the price and then they say, how much do I need to hit my goal? What I say is, no, you need to look at what the market would ask for this. So if it's a book, if it's Malcolm Gladwell, you can get Malcolm Gladwell for $11.99 on Kindle. So you're probably not as good as Malcolm Gladwell. So your book should cost $7.99 if you launch it via crowdfunding. It should be cheaper than what costs in the market, not more expensive. So that's step one. Step two is get rid of the $5 or $10 digital high five or thank you. Nobody wants that. Nobody cares. Nobody wants their name on a website that didn't exist 5 days ago. It's really just a cop-out, and it's a way for people to say, you don't really have to donate to the campaign, but if you'd like to throw me $5 or $10, that'd be great. And we'll love you forever and give you a digital high five. Nobody wants that. So it's digital. This is 2014. So why not create something really useful, of value? Let's say a 3-video YouTube series on how to use your product, or if it's a cooking product, a recipe series or something like that, and then offer it for $1. Because in essence, these people are paying you $1 to take their email address. Because if you get funded, now you have the emails of all the people that backed you and you can stay in contact with them. One of the biggest mistakes I made, you said some do's and some don'ts. So do offer your products below MSRP. Don't ask for the digital high five for $5 or $10. Instead, create something really useful of value and offer it for $1. Or the other strategy is, if it's a digital thing like a film, you might want to skip the $1 level altogether and just offer the film for like $9.99, $10 HD digital download, because there's no cost of fulfillment. You're basically just sending these people Dropbox or an Amazon Web Services link. If you can keep your rewards digital at the lower levels, then you can keep your costs low. But the biggest thing is below MSRP, tell a great story and give people something they want. As founders, we get founder myopia, and we think that everyone sees the world the way we do, and we think they want our rewards that often they don't.
You just mentioned to tell a great story. What are some components of a great story when it comes to these platforms?
If you look at Jake Bronstein, he probably tells the story better than anyone on Kickstarter. There's lots of great examples. And this is another one where, if you go back to the whole just do the research, if you look at like the Freaker water bottle, they told a really great story. The product was something a lot of people don't need, and they probably only wanted it because the video was so good. But the video is this extremely well-produced, funny, hilarious video of this crazy-looking guy who learn how to make these basically bottle cozies. They're like hand-knitted things to keep your sweat off your cold beer bottle. When you clicked play on the video, you didn't even know that you needed one of those. And by the end, you wanted one just because it made you a little more fun, a little more crazy, a little more like this guy. So Jake Bronstein told a different story. He said he picked an enemy that is disposable fashion. So brands like H&M and Zara. Jake said, these guys are ripping you off. They're selling you $12 blouses that fall apart in 6 months. Instead, what you should buy is quality American-made clothing, and we happen to sell that. We sell the 10-year hoodie. If it breaks or tears or rips, send it back and we will mend it for us, and it'll last at least 10 years, and it'll get to be broken in and get to be your favorite hoodie. Jake not only told a story, he picked an enemy and positioned his own product against that enemy. And by the end of the video, you weren't really paying $80 for a sweatshirt. You were paying $80 to join Jake's movement, and the sweatshirt was a souvenir, if that makes sense.
It does make sense.
As far as components in the video to include, I mean, it varies a little bit, but I would say, one, keep the whole video under 3 minutes for sure, and under 2 minutes if you can. Jake's videos are all under 2 minutes. That's people's attention span on the internet. And I see crowdfunding videos all the time that are 5, 6, 7, 8 minutes. And these are the same people who would never sit through anyone else's 5, 6, 7, 8 minute video online. So tell your story quickly. You can put more information below. It should cover who you are, what the problem is, why you're doing this, why you're the right person to do it, who your team is, your process and progress to date. You want to explain how the world can be once your product is in it, and then end with a call to action to actually buy it. Most people forget that. They just kind of let the video end. My friend AJ Leon ran his, and at the bottom, or at the end of the video, he said, would you back a fellow misfit? And misfit is his tribe. That's his thing. That's his company. That's his tribe. And That's how he refers to the people that follow him. So when he said, "Will you back a fellow misfit?" that's like the perfect call to action, because he was speaking to the people in his tribe. And then at the end, another little trick is, so I'll take Kirio for an example. You could say, "So please check out our rewards below or share this with the one cat lover that you know." By saying, "Share it with the one cat lover that you know," people will think automatically in their mind of the one cat lover they know. Oh, my Aunt Mary loves cats, and so I'm going to send it to her. And then as I'm mailing it to her, I'll add two or three more people to the thing. But if you ask people to tweet it and post it, then they're not anchoring it to one specific person, and chances are they won't just tweet or post it. So again, it's a understanding kind of psychology and how people think.
So we've done all this. The campaign is going. There's a week left. It's maybe 75% funded, and you need to make that great push in the end. What do you recommend?
Well, that's when people call me, unfortunately. That's usually not when I can offer the most help. If you're 75% funded with a week to go, you have about a 90% chance of getting funded, because most campaigns spike in the beginning and at the end. Some of that has to do with the platforms sometimes featuring you. They'll often feature projects that are sort of almost funded. But what I would do is, again, the updates. And the updates shouldn't just be "please back us." It should be "thank you so much. We're so excited. We're so close to our goal. We really want to bring this to the world." Frame all the updates and the communications. And then you can email the list again. If you've built this list of 500 or 1,000 people, email them. Subject line can just say, "We're almost there, ... And explain, reiterate how close you are to your goal, and then just ask them to share it with one friend or back it if they haven't yet, and help us get over the finish line and bring this great product to the world.
When the campaign is over, right, and you have to fulfill all these orders and everything, is there something you can recommend, maybe like a website or someone that helps you with the whole backend and helps you with the fulfillment?
There's a handful of them. BackerKit is designed to do that. It's true that Kickstarter, they do a lot of things well. Indiegogo, same thing. But when you have a lot of levels and a lot of rewards and a lot of backers, it is hard to manage it all, and spreadsheets can get onerous. I know BackerKit does a pretty good job. I've had a few folks use them. And I think there's a few more popping up. But yeah, I would check out BackerKit.
Are there any other tips that you can recommend for running a successful campaign?
I mean, I could talk about this for all day, but basically build permission ahead of time, design pricing and rewards that people want. One trick is Kickstarter allows you to build all this stuff before you launch. You can preview it. What I would do is figure out if you want strangers or friends. You probably want both, but understand where your percentage is. There's a lot of crowdfunding campaigns that are 80% friends and family and 20% strangers. But if you know, based on your goals and who your friends and family are, that you need 80% strangers, what I would do is build out your crowdfunding campaign. Don't submit it yet. Just build it out with the video and everything else, and then get the preview link. And then I would walk into Starbucks and bring $100 and buy $25 free coffee gift cards, and then stand in line at Starbucks and say, "Hey, this $5 coffee card is yours free if I can have 5 minutes of your time. Will you watch my Kickstarter video? Will you watch my Indiegogo video?" Most people will say yes, or half people will say yes. And then you'll get real feedback from strangers, because there's no, of course, your sister, your brother, your aunt is not going to tell you they don't like your crowdfunding campaign. But just give them the coffee card and say, you can even say it's not yours, or have your friend do it. Say, "This isn't mine, so feel free to be blunt. We're trying to do market research here. What is interesting about this to you?" And again, there's a great blog post by a woman named Ellie Luna, or El Luna, and it's called "Most People Won't." The truth of the matter is most people won't. Most people won't build an email list months in advance of the campaign. Most people won't spend $100 on 20 Starbucks gift cards and go to Starbucks for 4 hours and really get great feedback with two people sitting there and understand what's confusing. Why would you back this? Why wouldn't you? That kind of thing. Yeah, I mean, studying the gold mine of data that's out there and building lists ahead of time. Like I said, these campaigns get funded before they launch, not while they're live usually.
This has been very helpful. Where can people contact you, find you? Where can they find your course when it comes out?
Clay Hebert. My last name is H-E-B-E-R-T. I'm pretty much Clay Hebert everywhere on the web, on Twitter, Clay Hebert. The website with blogs and blog posts and videos and free tips and tricks is crowdfundinghacks.com. If you sign up at the email list there, you'll be notified when the course comes out. The course will probably be at Crowdfunding Hacks. It'll be off a link off crowdfundinghacks.com. So that's the best place to start.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebelt. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.